Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader. He's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Senator.
Well, today, Ben, we're talking about your article that appeared in the Reader on November 27th, 2014, titled, Give the Mayor Credit. School graduation rates are up.
Yeah, I gave him credit for something.
He's going to use that in one of his campaign ads, I understand.
I'm sure he will.
He's going to have it bronzed. You write about the announcement from Chicago Public Schools, or CPS, that about 70% of its students who start high school end up graduating. Mm-hmm. This is up from the situation in the 90s when the dropout rate was over 50%. Mm-hmm. You also credit this turnaround to a practice that some call social promotion,
yes,
whereby failing students are passed on to the next grade rather than held back.
Yes, I'm a big believer in social promotion, yes.
You're also a beneficiary of it.
That is correct.
Right. That's you admit it.
I admitted that. My inner secrets have been revealed to all that I almost should have flunked chemistry as a junior.
You know, I didn't have to take chemistry in high school. They gave us the option of taking physics.
I see. Okay. Well, that in itself is a form of social promotion by allowing you to avoid a difficult course.
And I regretted it in college.
Diluting the curriculum.
In your article, you argue that passing students is clearly better than holding them back because the latter makes it more likely they'll quit school.
If you want to lower your dropout rate, it's better.
Yeah.
That is correct.
But it also benefits students.
Presumably, it's better off for a student to be in school than out of school and to get a high school diploma than not get a high school diploma. Absolutely.
In contrast, this month, the University of Chicago Consortium on Chicago School Research issued a report. In its report, the consortium concluded that, based on ACT test scores, many CPS students remain unprepared for college. I'll take it a step further. I've talked with employers and post-secondary school teachers who end up with CPS high school graduates who read poorly, write terribly, can't do math, etc. They wonder how a student can graduate from high school so poorly prepared. What do you say to those people?
Well, it's the same old debate that we had in the 90s that was never settled in the 90s and probably will never be settled. And that is, what's the point of staying in school if you're not really learning anything? So Mayor Rahm has been going around pounding his chest, bragging about how under him more people are staying in school longer. You're raising an interesting point that it doesn't really matter if they stay in school longer if they're not picking up the skills that they need to satisfy the demands of your friends who are looking for employable people.
Of employers or even college teachers.
That is correct. And I come back and saying, yes, this is a very crucial point. This was one that was advocated by Paul Vallis and Jerry Chico and Mayor Daley back in the 90s, where they said they were going to make certain that a high school diploma in Chicago meant something by flunking kids who are not passing their courses or scoring high in standardized tests. And what they discovered is that, first of all, it cost money to hold them back and send them to summer school, which our dead broke system couldn't afford. So we had to worry about the cost of summer school. But then we found that we were driving up the dropout rate by doing this. So because we wanted to save that money on summer school courses and because we wanted to reduce the dropout rate, we moved toward the current program, which is now, I guess, a form of social promotion. So when you ask me what's better for society, that we have students who remain in school longer but may or may not be graduating with the skills that employers need, or to have kids drop out without the skills, I would tell them it's better to have them in school. That's why I gave Mayor Rahm a shout out.
And the benefit is, if they're not acquiring the skills either way, the benefit of having them in school is that you feel like they're going to benefit in some way.
Well, okay. I think that, first of all, it's better to be in school than out of school when you're 16 years old.
Just to be off the streets.
Just off the streets. Then there's also always the possibility that if you're in school, I realize this sounds incredibly naive and idealistic, you might actually stumble upon some program, some curriculum, some activity that will spark you and lead you on to bigger and better things.
At least you're exposed.
You're exposed, yeah. Like, I'm trying trying to think in my own life what I was exposed to in high school.
It wasn't chemistry.
No, it definitely was not chemistry. You know, my junior year English class, I Grapes of Wrath, etc. Anyway, at some point or another, there's a chance that if you remain in school, you might have an experience that will help you later on in life. So I would say that if your employers who are dissatisfied with the workforce that they could potentially hire, even they, if they thought about it longer, would say it's better to be in school than not in school.
And one of the things that kids these days who stay in school are exposed to more is testing.
Utter insanity.
One of the things that CPS teachers say impedes learning is the increasing amount of time taken up with testing.
Yes.
One of the lesser known problems with CPS requiring more testing is that it interferes with the learning of students who aren't taking the test. Here's how one CPS elementary school teacher described it. Because his school's computers are all in one place, the computer lab, and all testing takes place in the lab, the school's computers are inaccessible to all students for a full 25% of the school year while various tests are being done. Further, because testing for a test called Measures of Academic Progress, or MAP, takes place over multiple periods, it makes regular class switches, where kids change classes to go to a different class, it makes it impossible for some grades. So each time the MAP is administered, students miss class time on four different days so that their classmates can be tested. So it has all these other impediments to learning. And I'm saying all this because you hear from parents and teachers all of the time about Chicago Public Schools. What have you heard recently about testing?
I haven't had this discussion in a few months, but last year that was sort of my obsession, was the over-testing. There's way too much testing. The testing phenomenon is part and parcel the same measurement phenomena that really the graduation rate is a part of. So we're obsessed with establishing a metric, a way of measuring the value of our public school system. So in many ways, it's an artificial metric. It's just some kind of statistical means of getting accolades to the all-powerful mayor. There's no really substance to it. I happen to think that of all the silly metrics get thrown out by the Board of Ed on a regular basis to sort of justify how they're spending our money, the graduation rate is fairly significant because, again, I do believe there's a value in keeping students in school for longer. Ultimately, as my story said, you have to give them something of value in the school to really have value, but it's a start. So to me, going back to these obsessive standardized tests, it's become a tool to try to gauge the effectiveness of a teacher and a principal by holding him or her accountable for performances of students. So you're teaching the tests. You're just wasting everyone's time, in my humble opinion, that these standardized tests originally were intended to be a device to sort of help the teachers understand what a child's needs are. And now it's become a way of punishing the teacher or holding a teacher accountable. So I just think it's just become an industry, not unlike, I think you made a reference to the military earlier. It just becomes its own way of making money and it's a means of itself. And I wish we could wean ourselves of them and move away from them, but we seem to be heading in the other direction.
It strikes me that it's similar to charter schools in that charter schools, as we've discussed before, were originally intended as laboratories for innovations in education and teaching. And they became a way for private operators to come in and get contracts and, to put it bluntly, to siphon public dollars to private corporations. And testing has become a huge contractor to public school systems the same way.
There's twofold. One, it becomes, you're absolutely correct, a way for people to make money. Contractors make money, charter school operators make money. And it also, both of them become ways to stymie the teachers union, crush the teachers union, attack the teachers union, which seems to be a huge objective, unfortunately, of a certain segment of the Democratic Party, but pretty much the entire Republican Party, because the teachers union, as pointed out, is one of the few checks and balances that we have on corporate America and their control of the government. So what they do is they use children as sort of the cover for this union bashing attack. I think that's what's going on.
And just to clarify for our listeners, what you're talking about is, at least in the Chicago Public Schools case, the administration has compelled the union to agree that teacher assessments will be more heavily weighted upon test scores as opposed to simply observations by the boss, you know, the principal.
That is correct. That is in terms of the test scores part of it. And of course, the charter school part of it is that many of the charters are non-union, though that's changing. There's a growing movement or attempt to unionize the charters. So I don't think any of these things that you're discussing have much positive impact on the education of children and getting students ready so that they go into the workforce, that they can read, that they understand complicated ideas. In fact, I would say government doesn't want people to understand complicated ideas. They would make them...
Raising sheep.
Yes. More difficult to govern.
It's shepherding.
Yes, that is correct.
Well, let's talk about one of the chief shepherds, our mayor. All of this, of course, is taking place under the tenure of Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Let's talk about an article of yours that appeared in The Reader on November 13th, 2014, titled "The First Step to Toppling a Mayor, Getting on the Ballot." In this article, you write about what it takes for candidates to get on the ballot in Chicago's mayoral election. When we last spoke, 10 people had declared their candidacy for mayor, but one of them recently, attorney Amara Enya, citing the cost of fighting challenges to her nominating petition signatures, has withdrawn. And now she's backing Second Ward Alderman Bob Fioretti.
That's correct.
In your November 13th article, you speculated that Emanuel might not bother to challenge lesser-known candidates like Enya. Were you surprised?
Well, first of all, Emanuel didn't challenge Enya. Her campaign was challenged by forces. Oh, this is going to get so complicated. I'm going to challenge you here, folks. Another mayoral candidate, Willie Wilson, who is somebody I'm sure many of our listeners have never heard of until I just uttered that name. He is a Republican businessman.
Who has his signatures challenged by Emanuel's campaign.
That is correct. Now, that's interesting. Emanuel has challenged his, and this will be the subject of a coming article. So you've like
teaser
once again anticipated what I'm thinking. Anyway, Willie Wilson has said that he's going to significantly fund his campaign, which means commercials.
He's a millionaire.
Yes. So that's a threat to Rahm. If it's a low budget campaign that cannot reach the people on TV, where the people are to be reached, then it's of no threat to the mayor, and he probably doesn't care if they stay on the ballot. But if it's even an obscure candidate like Willie Wilson can get on TV, that has the potential to get votes for Willie Wilson. And as we've talked about many times, the more people who vote for candidates other than Rahm, the greater their likelihood there will be of a runoff. So it's in Rahm's interest to knock Willie Wilson off the ballot, and that's what he's trying to do. I don't know if he'll succeed.
And arguably it was in Wilson's interest to knock Enya off the ballot because he's a black candidate and so is she.
I would argue that it's not in his best interest to knock her off, but as I've said to you many times, most people don't listen to my advice.
They didn't hire you to consult on that.
Yeah.
Why wasn't it in his best interest?
It's the same thing as anybody else. It's all about the runoff. I guess you were saying that if his goal is to make a runoff with Mayor Rahm, he knocks off Amara, then her voters might vote for him. I don't see how her voters, she's coming at the electorate from the left, and he's coming at the electorate from the right. I don't see the convergence. So I just think this was a waste of time and effort and energy to knock her off. But
he's got the money.
He's got the money. And so he was fighting. It's bizarre, only in Chicago, a situation where, you know, he's claiming the injustice of it all as he fends off Rahm's attack while knocking her off the ballot.
Yeah. Seems a little contradictory.
Yeah.
And another development was that another candidate who dropped out, so-called media strategist, name of William J. Kelly, changed the dynamics of the election by self-contributing over $100,000 to his own campaign, thereby blowing off, as they say, the
non-existent cap.
The state-mandated caps on individual contributions to campaigns, allowing all the other candidates to therefore be able to accept contributions, single contributions in excess of $100,000. Kelly defended this action, even though he dropped out of the race, by saying this helps challengers to Emanuel who are at a disadvantage because they don't have the kind of fundraising ability that Emanuel does. So Kelly claims he was doing a favor to all the challengers of Emanuel. What do you think of that situation?
Well, he has a point there. I actually made the same argument in a post at one point or another. I mean, listen, we have a strange system of campaign finances in Illinois where we passed this law that put a cap on contributions. I think it's like $5,300, something like that, but the cap can be lifted if any one candidate gives more than $100,000 to his own campaign. And so Rauner blew the cap when he gave money to his campaign, and William Kelly blew the cap when he gave money to his campaign, even though he eventually didn't even run his campaign. He dropped out of the race.
That's what made it so controversial.
Yeah. I'd say Kelly's correct that now Jesus Garcia is able to raise money. I think he got $250,000 from SEIU, I want to say, which he wouldn't have been able to get. On the other hand, Mayor Rahm immediately went out and shook down an assortment of gazillionaires and raised another untold amounts of...
He turned the spigot slightly more open.
Okay. Yeah. Money just poured in.
I think... Not that it wasn't already flowing and gushing out.
So Rahm already had a huge advantage in fundraising. And this is the point that Kelly would probably make. So Rahm already had a huge advantage in fundraising, which means he can subject us to ungodly amounts of propaganda with television commercials, which if anybody believes, I feel sorry for them. A guy like Fioretti now has the potential, or Garcia, to raise just enough money to maybe pay for flyers so he can send out flyers. You know what I'm saying? So every little bit helps. And the fact that they got that $250,000 may enable him to do a little propaganda spreading of his own. It'll be, you know, a drop in the bucket compared to his eminence, the mayor, but it's still something. So on one hand, thanks to Kelly blowing the caps, Rahm can spew even more propaganda with commercials, but Garcia can send out a couple flyers. So it's called, you know, an even playing field in Chicago politics. That's our system, folks.
Thanks for describing it, Ben, and thanks for joining me today.
You're welcome.
Listeners, if you haven't already subscribed to our podcast, you can do that by going on your web to chigob.com. Look for the box that says Follow Shy Gov, or search for Inside Chicago Government on iTunes. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.